Welcome to another edition of the True North Country Comics Podcast, dedicated to promote Canadian comic book creators and supporters. I'm John Swinimer. On this episode, I chat with Tobin Rasico. Originally from Saskatchewan, Tobin is a freelance comic book letterer, designer, and writer located in southwestern Ontario. His current ongoing comic book is called Crown and Anchor. During our chat, Tobin discussed the responsibilities of the letterer in the comic book creation process. He talked about his influences. Tobin also explained how he and his wife Alaire created Crown and Anchor. Tobin wanted to make a special call out to the Kickstarter project for Invisible Webs, described as the Matrix meets the Killjoys. Before we go further, I encourage you to like this podcast on iTunes and please leave a good rating. Also, check out the TrueNorthCountryComics.com website, like us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, so you can discover a lot more information about Canadian comic book creators and supporters. And now, here's my chat with Tobin Rasico.
I understand that you are a freelance comic book letterer and designer.
Yes, I also do a little bit of writing, but not too much as of late. But mostly, yeah, mostly lettering, and then I help a lot of people kind of with the production side, getting stuff ready to go to print.
That's cool. So I want to talk a little bit about your influences. Who were you reading when you were growing up?
So my, like, when I was younger, my influences were really weird because we lived in such a small town, or I lived in such a small town, that we didn't have a comic shop. Like, I didn't know that comic stores even existed until I was probably 18 or 19. So we would read like Archie digests and stuff just from the supermarket. And then every once in a while, my older brother would bring home like a Spider-Man issue or something. And I remember that always being really cool. But what I did is I wouldn't read them. I would just like cut them up.
Oh.
And put the pictures that I liked on the walls. And I remember once I got in really big trouble because I cut up one that apparently was going to be, you know, worth a ton of money because it was the 90s. And I'm pretty sure I like got reprimanded pretty bad by my parents and stuff. Besides that, I think when I was a teenager, I got into manga pretty heavy because we had like another supermarket that sold the Shonen Jump.
Oh, okay.
Kind of monthly collections.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really good. I remember getting a few subscriptions to that. But it wasn't until I was like out of high school working a full-time steady job that I was able to afford kind of the monthly trips to the store. So there, the first comic I picked up of my own choice was Rick Remender's Venom when he was still at Marvel. And then that kind of branched out to, from like Venom, I went to FF, and then I had to go back and start from Hickman's Fantastic Four. I started reading Dan Slott's Spider-Man, probably a few other odds and ends there. And then right around that time, too, is when the DC New 52 was launching.
Right.
So I jumped over to there because, again, it was a great starting on point. So I started with Scott Snyder's Batman. I really like Geoff Johns' writing, so I went through his like Aquaman and Green Lantern and caught up with all that stuff. I started with a lot of Marvel, but it was interesting because that era of Marvel, right, is kind of over. And now they're all over at Image. And so I basically followed all those creators over to Image. So I read now like everything that Rick Remender has written. I think is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Hickman's, all of Hickman's stuff. I really like Joshua Williamson's creator-owned stuff. So I read Birthright and Ghosted and Deathbed, which is his newest one. But mostly now it's just all Image. I don't really follow the monthly grind as much anymore. I'm a trade reader. They're just easier to buy and carry around the country and stuff with moving and school. Yeah, and very little DC as well still.
I was going to ask you about your current project. I believe that's Crown and Anchor.
Crown and Anchor, that's right. That's a kind of fantasy, sci-fi, pirate, mythology story that my wife and I create, actually. She illustrates it, and I do the rest of the production work and writing and lettering and all that kind of stuff. So that was a project that was born a few years back. I was spending a couple of years in the Dominican Republic as like a church missionary, and I was exposed to all these new cultures, right? Because growing up in Saskatchewan, it's pretty limited. And all these new and interesting things kind of got my brain going. I started putting together this story of these two guys kind of exploring this world and trying to track down these bad humans, but with an underlying tale of kind of the meaning of life under all of it.
Hmm.
And it's something that my wife Alaire and I have been slowly building in the background. So when we started making comics, we took the plunge into web comics, probably too headstrong. And, you know, we were basically, she would finish a page like Thursday night and we would post it on Friday. We didn't have any backlog or anything like that of it. So we got burnt out on web comics really fast and it was really hard to build an audience. But with this one, we kind of took our time and we were examining what we wanted to do to kind of establish ourselves as creators. And so a lot of writing has been done, and she finished issue 3. That's being posted online, but then what we're going to do is print a few and take to local conventions and then kind of do like a manga style printing of it, where we just print trades of it instead of issues, to go forward with that, to have the audience or to have readers have a nicer chunk of story in their hand. And basically what the story is there's these three bounty hunters, and they find what's called a divine token. And basically it's this piece of lore that's existed basically since the creation of the world that they exist in, which is called Aventus. And they spend the first few issues just trying to figure out what it is before they get enticed enough to go and start tracking down the rest of the pieces to try to unlock the story of what's under it. And so each of the heroes is kind of a different like personality. So one of them is really fiery and short-tempered. The other one is kind of slow and more thoughtful. And the other one is kind of the balance in between, and they all have their own personal stories. But a lot of it revolves around finding your place in the world, who you make your family and who kind of is your birth family, but who you don't want to be associated with based on beliefs or whatnot. And then ultimately just trying to figure out what you believe or what you accept as truth, whether or not it is factual or whether it's just something that kind of makes you feel good at the end of the day.
You mentioned that you started this project on the web as a web comic. Looking back now, I do see a lot of creators start that way. In fact, it's probably an easy way to do it. Looking back now, would you have done something differently?
I don't think we had options to do anything other than on the web. I mean, we live in Waterloo, so there's a decent convention circuit around here, right? You have Toronto really close, you have Ottawa close, and that kind of stuff. But to keep up with building an audience other than just from like September to November, you have to go digital these days, and basically free, because if you're a nobody, people are not going to give you money unless they know what you're capable of. I mean, I would have liked to have, you know, somebody else pick it up and distribute it and stuff, but that's very rare, I feel, these days. While I don't love the webcomic medium, because I much prefer talking with fans face to face and, you know, flipping through books and saying, this is one of my favorite parts or one of my favorite scenes that Allaire's drawn or whatever really meaningful to me. It's just kind of the necessity, I feel like, for a lot of indie creators these days, is bringing your readers to a place online that's free, that you can still interact with them. And then at the end of the day, if they want something physical, either a Kickstarter or you self-publish it or whatever, to be able to get that into their hands eventually. But I think, I think digital and online is basically going to be the new future for indie creators.
Now, you mentioned Kickstarter. I believe you're involved in a current project called Invisible Webs.
There's been a few, I think this past month through July and August, that have been put on there. Invisible Webs is still running. There's only a few days left of it, but from a creator, all the indie, the people that I work with seem to overlap a lot when I'm lettering, but he's involved with another project, and he came over to me and asked if I'd want to letter it, and I accepted. I don't remember too much about the story of it, but it's a black and white kind of futuristic sci-fi story about like technology and the influences of technology, and just kind of who or how technology can kind of like dissuade trust or break down barriers in government or family and that kind of stuff, and the kind of the risks that are involved with increasing technologies and that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's 3 days left as of today to fund it. We're really close. I think we need around 300 more to get it fully funded. And then other than that, there's been, two or three previous to that have been funded successfully. So that's always exciting.
That's good. You mentioned that you're a letterer on the project, and for some people who aren't familiar with the process, I mean, they just assume the words go on automatically into a comic book. Can you describe the process of how that takes place and how you're involved with the other creators when you're doing this?
So for what I do, it really depends on the creators. So some creators are really gung-ho and they want to see their words on the art really fast. So for a lot of projects that I work on, whether it's going to be black and white or stay black and white or be colored, I will do preliminary letters over black and white files. So the creator, you know, the writer writes the script, he'll send the script to the illustrator will draw all the illustrations and break down all the panels and stuff. And whether it's a penciler, then there's an inker, you know, whatever the creative team is involved with. And then I'll get the script and all of the finished pages. And so I'll pull the pages into Illustrator, and I have a template set up with the proper dimensions and a whole bunch of fonts and stuff that I like. And so usually what I'll do is I'll select a page with kind of a good variety of dialogue and sound effects, and I'll do 3 to 4 sample fonts and word balloon styles and that kind of stuff, all with the same dialogue. And then I basically just send it off and say, hey, these are some that I feel work with your, with the illustrator style or with the tone of the book or, you know, the genre of the book, if it's something like that. Personally, I like this one because some creators need a little push in the right direction sometimes. But ultimately, yeah, I'll give my 2 cents, but give them lots of options. And then they select one and I'll say thank you very much. And I go back and I remake my template so that I can kind of cut as many corners on my end as possible. And then I work with 2 monitors. So on one monitor, I'll have the script, and then on the other monitor, I'll have Illustrator. So I'll pull all the bubbles or word balloons and dialogue over top of the panels, copy and paste in the dialogue, arrange it so it looks nice into nice triangles, or if I have to do budding balloons or whatever it is, and then go through my process of lining it all up and making sure that the eye path is smooth and I'm not covering up anything critical. And then if it's black and white, but going to be colored, there's kind of a pause. So I'll do everything up and I'll make up a PDF to send over to them, and then they'll look through it. And if they have edits or whatever, it'll come back to me and I'll take care of that. And then as colored pages come in, depending on if there are sound effects, then I'll go back and I'll redo the sound effect to kind of match the palette or the tone of the scene. If they are going to print, we'll do a print-ready PDFs. If it's just for online, I'll export them files to post online and whatnot. And I don't know, it's not too much work because I've got it so streamlined now. But I feel like, yeah, a lot of creators don't understand kind of the intricacies or the impact that lettering does have on a project. And so it's always interesting kind of collaborating with somebody who it's either their first project or even just me working with them for the first time, seeing how enlightening it is to have some of this stuff explained to them that, yeah, they really just overlook it because it's kind of just this magic that seems to happen out of the blue for a lot of creators, I feel like.
I think letters are one of the unsung heroes when it comes to making comic books, that's for sure. Has it ever happened to you where you have to go back to a creator and say, look, there's too many words here, you got to do some editing
of
your content? Or do you ever take it upon yourself to do editing, or is that something you're not allowed to do?
If it's like, so a lot of creators don't understand the personal comma, right? So if a line of dialogue is like, hey, we're going to dinner, John, do you want to come with us? It won't have the comma before John. So like little stuff like that, or a lot of people won't understand just kind of the grammatical nuances of comic book dialogue in itself, right? So if it's like a double dash or ellipses or that kind of stuff, they'll overuse it. So sometimes I'll get a scene or a word balloon, it'll have like 6 periods after a word to like really show somebody trailing off. And I'm like, well, that works, but you just need 3, or, you know, because a lot of lettering, I feel like, is unnecessary if the illustration is showing what they need in terms of tone or, you know, sarcasm and that kind of stuff. But in terms of overwriting, I think it was just yesterday I had to send back some pages, and I literally just left the balloons over top of the art, and I said, look, this is what you're going to end up with. It's going to be a bunch of torsos because there's not enough space in here. So you got to figure out what is not necessary and then let me know, and I'll cut it down. The one liberty I do take if it is overwritten is I'll try to break up word balloons into multiple to try to like squeeze them in a little bit more. But yeah, if it's hopeless, I'll just send it back to the creator and say, hey, we need to address this, because otherwise it's going to be just a chain of balloons covering all these faces.
Yeah, no one's going to read that. Sounds like you need a lot of patience, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's some days where I lean back in my chair and say, why am I doing this? But it's always worth it, because like I love creating and I love being able to collaborate with these people and see their passion come through, and that always helps kind of fuel me even when it's frustrating or tedious at times.
Sure. You mentioned Waterloo before. You're planning to exhibit at the Cambridge Comic Arts Festival. It's coming up soon. Have you been there before at that event?
No, so my wife and I are coming up to our 1 year anniversary of being in Waterloo. We arrived last September I just finished my master's program at U Waterloo. So we've exhibited we did Forest City Comic Con in London. We did the Kitchener Comic Expo, and then we did Maker Expo. So we've never done Cambridge. And then for the rest of this fall, we're repeating Forest City. We're doing Windsor. We made it into Mississauga. And we're doing the new Tri-City Supercon as well.
That's by Richard Cumley is organizing that one.
Yeah, that's right.
That should be a good one for sure. Good. Well, it sounds like you've got a busy schedule up ahead, and you've got a lot of great content for people to see. So that sounds like you're going to have a lot of success in the future.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I love doing conventions. I could sit and just talk face-to-face with people forever. So I'm really excited. It's going to be a really exciting fall. I'd like to make a plug for my wife, as I'm not the only creative person involved in this, but she live streams every day. She draws comics for myself, like for our projects and for other clients. So people can follow her and watch her do illustrations and ask her questions and pick her brain and stuff. She also has a Patreon. Please check out Crown and Anchor. If you like it, follow us on Twitter and stuff, and there'll be printed editions this fall with collected editions coming in the new year.
Thanks to Tobin for chatting with me. You can find Tobin on Twitter at Tobin Racicot, that's TobinRacicot, and online at letterdrone.artstation.com. You can also find more about Alaire Racicot online at twitch.tv/shiningcapella and on Patreon at patreon.com/artindustries. And thanks to you for listening to the True North Country Comics podcast. I invite you to subscribe, like, and comment on the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at True North Comics, on Facebook at facebook.com/TrueNorthCountryComics, and on Instagram at instagram.com/TrueNorthCountryComics. And please send your feedback to info@TrueNorthCountryComics.com. Thanks again for listening, and come back soon for another episode. Bye for now. True North Country Comics Podcast is copyright True North Country Comics, copyright 2018.